This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Graphs of sea surface temperatures are pretty scary lately, the hottest since measurements began. Is the recent flare-up of El Niño, or is it climate change to blame? Will hot seas last, and what would that mean? New science suggests we are getting a glimpse of the future, a preview of a 3-degree hotter world. We have reached Dr. Till Coolbrot, Senior Research Fellow with the UK National Centre for Atmospheric Science. Based in the University of Reading Department of Meteorology, Dr. Coolbrot helps lead the United Kingdom Earth System Model. He is a lead author of new work on two major warning signs from the sea. From Reading, Dr. Coolbrot, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
I'm so glad to be here. Hi, Alex.
Well, your team's new report is on two changes, a hotter Atlantic and disappearing sea ice around Antarctica. First, just to begin, why is ocean heat so important, even though nobody lives there?
The one thing is that the Earth system is taking up lots of additional heat. It has been doing so since approximately 150 years or so, ever since humanity started burning fossil fuels. So there's an awful lot of additional heat in the Earth system, and we, from analysis of observational data, we know that the oceans take up about 90% of this additional heat. So this is obviously the bulk. And this means anything that's going on with the oceans warming up is a direct indication for what happens with the entire Earth system, including living beings, vegetation, and the entire atmosphere.
It seems like every day someone posts a graph showing sea surface temperatures higher than anything measured by humans before. What is the situation, and is this record warming only at the surface?
Sea surface temperature is a very good observational variable to almost do it in real time. And that is because all the weather satellites we have up there, they can basically see with their radiation the sea surface. They cannot penetrate water, but the sea surface is a very good measure. It's a very good real-time observational data. What we wrote about in this essay in BAMS is that approximately 12 months ago, the sea surface temperature of the entire North Atlantic, it kind of left everything that we have observed in the last 40 years or so, and from satellites and much longer from other data, and has become much larger than that. So really standing out by another half degree or so, which is a lot because this covers the entire Atlantic. And it has basically left the typical seasonal cycle from all the years before. And it is still there 12 months later. So it is still at a value much higher than anything before in the 40 years before. So when we started seeing that last year, we got very concerned about this, because even now we don't really understand what's going on there. But the thing is the sea surface temperature, because, for instance, the winds coming across from Northern America here to us in Europe over the Atlantic, they pick up a lot of this extra heat. And this means if the sea surface of the North Atlantic is much warmer than it used to be, then that has an impact on the climate we see in Europe and in other places.
Well, you've had some pretty stormy times in Ireland and the UK and North Europe, and is that connected to this hotter North Atlantic?
It's a good question. It's always difficult to build this connection, robust connection, for a single event. So in this paper that we wrote, we have not so much looked at individual weather patterns, but more at the large-scale picture. However, it is generally absolutely certain from our scientific understanding that with the ongoing rapid acceleration of global heating, the likelihood for extreme events in weather becomes much larger. That is something we know for sure.
You also found a mysterious change in salt levels in the North Atlantic, not seen in other parts of the world's oceans. Does this tell us something?
That is right. So one thing we're showing is that we see that the salinity in the top 100 meters in the Atlantic basin has been increasing at a rate that we don't see in other ocean basins. Currently, we don't really know what happens there. I mean, we are stating really the observations. So there could be changes in ocean currents It could be simply changes in evaporation, which means if warmer air is over the Atlantic basin, leading to more evaporation of water, which is always pure fresh water, then that leaves behind more saline waters. It could also be from, there are some indications from climate model simulations that if the salinity increases in the Atlantic, separate from other ocean basins, that that could be an indication for a weakening of the Atlantic meridional overturning circulation. So at this point, we can only say this could be one of the causes. It is too early to look at the direct observations of this overturning circulation, because for that you want to have observations throughout the entire depth of the Atlantic, and those measurement devices are more there in the depths of the Atlantic. And my colleagues from Southampton here and other places need to actually literally go there, retrieve these instruments, and read out the data, which will, I think, happen later this year or early next year.
Let's go to the other end of the Earth. Several EcoShock guests report on the shocking decline of sea ice around Antarctica. What is going on, and why did you choose that as a focus point in your new study?
Yeah, so in Antarctica, or in the waters around Antarctica in the Southern Ocean, it has been observed since approximately 2015 that, as opposed to decades before, the sea ice cover is rapidly going down. We have looked there, actually, because when we saw this very, very, very extremely warm sea surface temperature in the North Atlantic, my idea was to look at a global context. I mean, there will be local processes as well leading to this very warm surface, but I wanted to see what's going on in the other ocean basins. And now if you go from the Atlantic of the latitudes of North America or Europe, and you go all the way down, then you see that there's a basin called Weddell Sea, which is part of the Southern Ocean, and also part of deep water formation size and a climatically very active part of the Southern Ocean. So I was looking for global connections there. And then sea ice cover is, like sea surface temperature, is something that the satellites can see very easily. It's an indicator that is available in real time. And so I just looked at that, and then I was intrigued by the fact that we just see this similarity or the same thing happening. The North Atlantic becoming extremely warm out of a sudden compared to 40 years before, and then the Southern Ocean did the same with the sea ice extent. This could be coincidence, of course, but I would love to be sure that it's coincidence and exclude major changes in global ocean circulation as an underlying reason.
Well, naturally, people on the east coast of the Americas and in Northern Europe worry about a change in the Gulf Stream, and that keeps people warm. But Australian scientist Matthew England told us the other end of that ocean heat pump, the Antarctic bottom circulation, has already begun an unstoppable weakening. Is there a connection between these two great current systems? What are your thoughts?
That is a good question. I mean, that is a question that people like me and others have been thinking about and doing research on for decades, actually. What is certainly true is that in the Southern Ocean, approximately at the latitudes of the tip of South America, there is a belt of very, very strong westerly winds that lead to a large-scale upwelling of deep water masses. So you can imagine the wind is pushing the waters apart and a lot of waters are welling up. And some of these waters go northwards into the Atlantic and downwell there around Greenland. And part of the same waters are being pushed towards the Antarctic coast, and then they form this Antarctic bottom water. So there is certainly a link between these two overturning circulations. How strong it is, and that is something that we don't understand very well, and we couldn't really quantify it, but we always think of it as one connected system.
Former NASA scientist James Hansen insists the key measurement for the state of the Earth is not carbon dioxide, but the difference between arriving solar energy and heat reflected back into space. Tell us about Earth energy imbalance and its disturbing recent trends.
On that point, I would fully agree with Jim Hansen. This Earth energy imbalance is exactly as you said. It's outgoing minus incoming, or the other way around, depending on how you define it. This difference tells you how much heat the Earth system is actually taking up. And when we began the interview, I was talking about that. for, let's say, for the first 20 years of this century, 2000-2020, this imbalance was had values like something 0.7, 0.8 watts per square meter. That sounds small, but it's per square meter. And obviously, if you multiply this with the surface of the Earth, it's a very large value. Now, again, from satellite data, we have seen that since about 10 or 15 years, approximately, this Earth energy imbalance has developed a steep upward trend. So this value at the top of the atmosphere becomes larger from year to year. So currently, we are at values in the region of 1.5 watts per square meter for the past 12 months, for instance. And this is really quite concerning because this is clearly evidence for the acceleration of global heating. So not only do we see that the Earth system is warming up from year to year, but the amount by which it warms up is also increasing by year to year. And that is very, very concerning indeed. So there are various possible reasons certainly reasons is the ever-increasing concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the vast majority of that from human action. Also, the reduction of aerosol emissions, soot particles, for instance, sulfur particles who would reflect sunlight. The thing with these aerosol emissions is, however, that they come with very large uncertainties. We cannot observe them very well. So that contribution is not quite clear at the moment. But this acceleration that it has also been proven from other data, so from direct observations of temperature in the ocean waters, you can also show that it has been shown convincingly. Yeah, that is extremely concerning because if you extrapolate this acceleration for the next 20, 30 years, we will be quickly going into regions with our climate system which become very, very inhospitable for us humans and most of other animals and the vegetation.
The paper published in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society promises glimpses into the future in a hotter world. What do you mean?
The idea was here that we have seen in 2023 these extremes, far out extremes in sea surface temperature for the North Atlantic and sea ice cover for the Southern Ocean. And we were thinking, well, we know that the climate system as a whole or the Earth system goes into this direction anyway. So we thought, at what global warming level in the future would we expect such extremes to be the new normal, basically? And so we looked at a great number of climate model simulations and Earth system model simulations, which are available in archives, those archives which are being used for these assessment reports of the IPCC. So this is really an illustrative exercise. But we found that if you look at the mean climate state at a 3-degree global warming level, so for context, currently we are at approximately 1.2 degrees of global warming on average. And what we found is that these very high sea surface temperatures in the North Atlantic, which we have observed this 1 year so far, and the very low sea ice extent in the Southern Ocean, this is what we would expect to be the average conditions if we go towards a 3-degree global warming. And this really serves as an illustration what we're up to if we go that high as a humanity. Because in the North Atlantic and in the Northern Hemisphere as a whole, obviously in 2023, we have seen a lot of extreme events that have caused a lot of damage, that have caused a lot of deaths in some events. We would have that every year at approximately a 3-degree global warming level.
You hold a senior role at the United Kingdom Earth Systems Model. You are co-author of several papers on Earth model development. What is an Earth system model? Does it exist on a computer network in one place? And why is the United Kingdom funding and working hard on this?
So an Earth system model in general is something very similar to a global climate model. So global climate models have been around for 40 years now, approximately. Don't quote me on that. Could also be 30 or 50, depending on your definition. This is kind of like a huge amount of code, numerical computer code, that calculates how the circulation in the ocean and in the atmosphere is going to develop over the next decades ahead. So this has been long around for just the ocean and the atmosphere and a little bit of the land surface and ice cover. If you upgrade this basically into an Earth system model, then you include a lot of chemistry. So for the atmosphere, that would be the whole chemistry of the ozone layer. It would be all the aerosols from humans, for instance, sulfur particles again, and how these are chemically processed. For the ocean, it includes the carbon cycle. So the oceans play an equally important role for processing all the additional carbon in the atmosphere from the carbon dioxide emissions. And so there's a lot of chemistry. So basically, we include all the chemistry of the Earth system, and specifically for the UK Earth system model, we are also including the dynamical ice sheets. So not only the sea ice cover on the Arctic and the Antarctic, which is usually relatively thin, a few meters maximum, but also the very slowly moving mile-high ice cover on Antarctica and Greenland. So the idea is that you have a computer model that is as comprehensive as we can for all the components of the Earth system. So this is, in our case, approximately 1 million lines of computer code, which we can run as a whole on modern top-tier supercomputers. So in our case, we do it at the UK Met Office and at other computing centers here in the UK, which are accessible to universities.
We repeatedly get news stories about climate-driven extremes beyond model projections. Some scientists complain the big models are too conservative, which may lead governments to underestimate the climate challenge. What do you think?
This is a very important point from my point of view. And this is one of the main conclusions of this paper in BAMS that we published a few weeks ago, that we say we do see evidence that some of these extreme events we have observed in the past few years are not captured by the models. And one example is the extreme warming that was seen in the northwestern states of the United States and on the west coast of Canada. I think that was approximately 2 years ago. So we really need to very carefully evaluate all these models, Earth system models, for instance, to make sure that we capture these extremes, because obviously people need warning, people, communities want to adapt to that. And that is an extremely important task, which we urgently need to do, because these things are happening now and people need information now. How likely are extreme events in the region, in the area where I live?
Can the UK Earth system model include things like tipping points?
We are looking into that, so I'm not doing that personally, but there are quite a few people that work with me on the UK Earth system model who are involved in a big project. This is currently funded by the European Union, by the Commission, on tipping points in Earth system models. So it could be sudden changes in the ocean circulation. It could be rapidly retreating ice sheet cover. It could be irreversible cover of vegetation, things like that. So this is a very, very active study of research, absolutely.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock from the University of Reading. Our guest is Earth System Model expert Till Kulbrot. We are talking about hot warning signs from the ocean pole to pole. I am fascinated by long-distance relationships on this planet, like teleconnections and big global waves. The new paper explores, quote, signs for connection between the North Atlantic and the Southern Ocean extremes, end quote. Please talk to us about what connections you can find between the poles.
So what we see, I mean, this is kind of like a very first glimpse on that, really. But what we see is that approximately around the year 2016, we have seen that the whole of the Atlantic has been showing a stronger warming trend than the other ocean basins. It has also been well documented that the year 2016 has also seen a major regime change in the Southern Ocean. And that is that between 1979, when satellite observations started, and 2016, on average, the sea ice cover there increased, which is counterintuitive in a warming world, but this is what we observed. By the way, a feature that the climate models never captured properly. And then around 2016, something happened in the Southern Ocean. Ever since then, the sea ice cover is decreasing rapidly. And so I have found now these signs in the ocean in the top 100 meters or 150 meters in the whole Atlantic basin warming up. And so this made me wonder, and so far I cannot do much more than pointing this out, that this is a very puzzling question, whether there's a link between the sea ice loss in the Southern Ocean, which of course has to go along with warming, and the warming in the Atlantic basin. So whether there's some sort of overall regime change there going on. So far, it's a big question for me, and definitely more work needs to be done to find out what the actual driving processes there are.
Dr. Kuhlbrot, longer-term impacts of climate change is one of your specialties. Do you expect warming and related changes will develop in a gradual, perhaps predictable ramp-up over decades, or could the climate shift in steps with big changes and then pauses at a sort of new level of normal? What do you think?
That's a very good question. I mean, if we look at how climate has warmed up globally and in over the past, let's say, 40, 50 years, we have not seen big jumps there, really. I mean, there are sometimes smaller jumps in some regions, but overall, it has been relatively smooth. That doesn't necessarily mean that the next decades are going to be smooth as well. Of course, there could be these tipping points ahead. I don't think we are certain about this in any regard. The most important thing I can say is that, I mean, what happens in the future, although, of course, depends absolutely crucially on what we as the human community keep emitting into the atmosphere. Or put it in another way, the less greenhouse gases we keep emitting into the atmosphere, the less trigger is there for larger jumps if they are ahead. And the more we limit the damage and mitigate the detrimental impact. So, because this uncertainty is out there, this is reason enough, in my understanding, to say, well, if we know that there's uncertainty out there and even a small risk for a major jump, then we most certainly don't want to go there. You know, it's the most basic precautionary thinking that we say, let's stay away from that, curb emissions as much as we can, even if it hurts, to avoid these major risks.
But as we speak, pretty well every oil and gas corporation and country is committing to more, not less, fossil fuels. The U.S. shot up to number one producer. The U.K. approved more drilling. Canada's building pipelines, on and on. When you produce future scenarios for your models, do you include a high emissions future, and what might that look like?
Absolutely. This is to produce the scenarios for assumed developments of human emissions in the next 40, 50, 60 years. That's a big globally coordinated effort between lots of different scientific disciplines. There are scenarios that say, okay, we keep emitting fossil fuels as much as we can. There are scenarios where we say humanity becomes reasonable and reduces it a lot. There are scenarios which are called regional rivalry, so where we say kind of like there's a lot of conflict going on, a lot of warfare, and people just don't have it on top of their heads to reduce emissions because there's much more urgent things to deal with. And so these scenarios over the next 10, 20, 30 years are diverging quite wildly. If we keep emitting fossil fuels, no matter what, then it's pretty clear that in 20 years from now, it's not going to come stepwise, but I mean, years like we have seen in 2023 for the Northern Hemisphere with crazy extreme events, with precipitation events that kill thousands of inhabitants of cities overnight, like we have seen it in the Mediterranean, much more weather variability, so much longer droughts, much stronger precipitation events, rain, or it could be in Northern America, there's often snowstorms, of course. So it would become much more inhospitable. We would also embark on a road of accelerated rates of sea level rise. And that's something that cannot be returned. So we already have banked in a large amount of sea level rise. And if you think of major world cities that are built right at the water's edge, New York is, of course, an example. Places like large port towns in Europe, like Hamburg, for instance, or Barcelona, would basically be submerged, if not in my lifetime, but then in the lifetime of one or two generations after us. And, of course, this is something you don't want to leave as a curse on generations after you.
So when we finish this interview and you go back to work, what are you working on now?
Currently, actually, we are looking at, we have run a big ensemble, so a big number of simulations with our Earth system model, where we look more than 100 or 150 years into the future. And we look at what happens if we keep emitting as we are, but not for much longer, and then the emissions of carbon or greenhouse gases go to zero, and then maybe even we can, in 50, 100 years from now, we have developed very good technology to get rid of a lot of the carbon in the atmosphere. So this would mean we can actually manage to cool down the climate again. And we are currently looking at these simulations to understand what's going on there, what of the effects of a hot climate can be reversed, what other effects we cannot maybe reverse, and to have more understanding of the options that we have as a humanity looking forward for the next two or three generations.
From the University of Reading, Department of Meteorology, we've been speaking with Dr. Till Coolbrot. He's the Senior Research Fellow with the UK National Centre for Atmospheric Science. We've been discussing the new paper, A Glimpse into the Future, the 2023 Ocean Temperature and Sea Ice Extremes in the Context of Longer-Term Climate Change. That is open access, free to read. Find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Till, thank you for sharing your valuable time with us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Alex. It was a pleasure talking to you. A very interesting conversation that we had there. Very relevant.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.